ແລະຍິດຈະຍິບໂຕນໍາຍິດໂລລາເພິນຈະສັງຍິດໂຕບາຈໍສັງຍິດໂຕໂຕຍິດຈະນໍາຍິດຈະສອນຈະແລະຍິດຈະຍິບໂຕນໍາຍິດໂລລາເພິນຈະສັງຍິດໂຕບາຈໍອັງເຈຈະຍິດໂຕນິຍະດາວະຕັມເຈບາເພິຈະເຕັມເພິຈິນເດນຈະບາກໍເດນດະລາຈາຈະລາຕົງຍິດຈະສອນໂຕຊິເພິຫາຈິຈະເຊຍກັນຈິນເດນຈະນາບິມາຈິນຈະສອນລໍສວານຈະນໍາຍິດຈິນຍິດໂລ ถ้าข้าสังเจ้าของตาถ้าสังเกตเสียดีกันนี่จุงกุลีเสียดีดังนั้นจุงกุลนั้นจุงกุลยาอันนี้เทวะพันเจ้าจุยาข้าสังอันนี้ใจวิชิตสังเกตสละรัวดาสังเกตเนี่ยสังเกตของเรากันนี่จุงกุลแล้วนะอันเทวะจุงกุลลำยมสุเลมปะเลตินเนี่ยสังเกตจุงกุลเนี่ยถ้าลำยมสุเลน่าเดียเนี่ยกันนี่สุเลมปะเรลำนั้นนะลำยมสุเลนี่กันเรลำนั้น นี่จะชื่อเส้นเป็นได้ขอว่าอะไรเงี้ยช่วยมีตาภาษาต่างๆแต่เนี่ยอันนี้เส้นเจนที่เกี่ยอันนี้เราเลยทิ้งเชื่อไว้มาสัมตาแต่เนี่ยอันนี้เส้นเจนที่เกี่ยเห็นเจนแล้วอันนี้เส้นเจนเกี่ยวกับชุนนั้นเป็นจับบกคมเส้นเจนทำจุดดวงอันนั้นจะนั่งยังไปกินยี่สิบคมแต่เนี่ยเส้นเจนทำจุดดวงอันนั้นดวงอันดาวอันนี้ยี่สิบคมเป็นเกิดภาษาสัมเกตหรอดะแต่เนี่ยเส้นเจนทำจุดดวงอันนั้นสัญญาบอกว่าทบทวนที่เส้นเป็นจะชื่อเส้นเกี่ย
So, good morning. Last night we spoke about how ourselves and all sentient beings are the same in wanting to experience only happiness and wanting to be free of all forms of suffering, no matter how slight. And we spoke about who or which being experiences this perfectly, and that is a Buddha. So it's only a Buddha who experiences happiness in its most perfect form and is completely free of all forms of suffering. So how does one become a Buddha? And we looked at that last night. It comes out to become a Buddha, one needs to engage in the practicing of the path, or the developing of our paths in our continuum, the mental paths. So how to do that? Well, the first we spoke about was to cultivate the mind of impermanence, and seeing how all our phenomena are impermanent, in particular this life and this opportunity that we have is impermanent. And then continue with the cultivation to generate the mind of definite emergence, or this mind of renunciation, through thinking about the faults of samsara, and how samsara is pervaded by suffering. And once that mind has been generated, then one needs to continue the cultivation, seeing how all sentient beings are caught within the same suffering state of samsara as we are. And like ourselves, they too are desperate to be freed from the suffering. And being aware of this, we generate the recollection on our intimate relationship, our close relationship with all sentient beings. From this, we then get to see how tremendously kind they have been to us in this life and in all previous lives. Thereby thinking about how we want to repay their kindness for them to experience only happiness, we generate the mind of love, and thinking about how to repay their kindness through alleviating all sentient beings of suffering, we generate the mind of compassion. Then we take this then to the next step, and that is to take the responsibility that we ourselves will bring about the lasting state of happiness for others and alleviate all sentient beings from suffering. So in this way, we generate this mind of special intention of taking responsibility to free all beings from their suffering state. And then this leads us to generating the mind of bodhicitta. And then we need to then engage in the practices of a bodhisattva. And what are these? These are the practices of the six perfections. So we spoke about the two accumulations last night, and these two accumulations of merit and wisdom are accomplished through the practice of the six perfections. So that's what we looked at in brief last night. So today we're going to start with the actual practices of a bodhisattva, so the first of the 37. And the first section that we'll be looking at, this is about the preliminary practices, the practices which are done before or in order to generate bodhicitta. So we will start with the preliminary practices to the generation of bodhicitta. So these practices are divided into three main sections. So we'll be starting with the first one, which are the causes for the arisal of bodhicitta. Later, we'll move on to the actual explanation of bodhicitta, which will be the bulk of the 37. And then the third and the final section is the explanation of the precepts of bodhicitta. So again, the first is the causes for the arisal of bodhicitta. The second is the actual explanation of bodhicitta. And the third is the explanation of the precepts of bodhicitta. So the first line in the verse we're looking at here on the question human life is having gained this rareship of freedom and fortune, or freedom and advantages. So what we have here is freedom and fortune, or as we had translated previously, freedom and advantages. Having attained all of these, one has attained a precious human rebirth. So a precious human rebirth comprises of these freedoms and advantages. And these are particularly difficult to attain. And we looked at this in some detail in our Labrum teachings a while ago, in the words of my perfect teacher. And we saw just how very difficult it is to bring about all the required causes to attain the full and complete freedoms and advantages. And this now is something that we, everyone here, has attained. We have this precious human rebirth. And this precious human rebirth, not only is it very difficult to obtain, but it is actually something of tremendous value. And we now have attained this state of tremendous value.
也是他们的情报了，具体对吧？结清不下的，完了吧？必须清不下的，结清不下的。实际上，俺都做工地，俺做绿地的，南区的绿地全部切下来，民的全部切的。地那就住那些几百人噻。但刚好住过来时呢，可比给他们刚刚得了他钱，俺他吧，电话讲讲，上街过光头来了，他比过光专业的，他住着就装塞的，住着就俺这个南区民的全部切的，这样的，反正结清不下，咋清不来就。
So we have here, having gained this rare ship. So rare ship, or we could call this a boat or an aeroplane, this is something that we have attained. And having attained this, one can use the ship to cross from, we can use the ship to cross over this ocean and to attain or to reach the far shore. So we see here in this first line how very difficult it is to attain this mode of transport. And what is this this rare ship or this aeroplane that we've attained? It's this physical form together with the mind. So we have this precious human rebirth. And the unique thing about this precious human rebirth we have attained is that it presents us with this ability to cross this great ocean. And then what is represented by this great ocean? It is the suffering experience of samsara. So to cross this great ocean of the suffering experience of samsara, one needs a vessel. And so in analogy, the vessel is a ship, or it could. But what it really is, of course, is our precious human rebirth that comprises these freedoms and advantages. And crossing this great ocean of suffering, of samsara, what is the distant shore that we are striving to reach? That is the state that is liberated from suffering, the state of liberation or nirvana or even Buddhahood. So that is the goal or the destination. The means is this precious human rebirth. And what needs to be traversed? That is this suffering state of samsara. This is what we need to transcend or to cross over. This precious human rebirth that is so difficult to obtain is not something that we can go out to a shop and buy. It's not something that just through having the strong wish and the determination, oh, next life I want to receive a human rebirth and have the ability to practice the Dharma. Having such a, just merely having that intention is not enough for us to attain another precious human rebirth. Similarly, a group of people can't gather together and go somewhere and demand that in future lives we want such a rebirth. It cannot be obtained in this way. The only way that it can be obtained or attained is due to the accumulation of the correct and complete causes and conditions. One cannot attain such a result through demanding it or insisting on it or going out and trying to buy it or thinking, oh, I'm a very powerful person, I can make it happen. That the only method to attain future precious human rebirths is through accomplishing the correct and complete causes. And so what are these then, correct and complete causes? Well, they are three. So the first, which is in order to attain a human rebirth, then that comes about due to the guarding purely one's ethical conduct. So through guarding one's ethical conduct well, and thereby refraining from non-virtue, then one accumulates merit, which will lead to a happy migration, such as that of a human rebirth. But attaining a human rebirth isn't enough. We see many beings who have a human rebirth, but their situation really is tremendously pitiful. So one also needs good conditions, for example, to be born in a good country, to have enough to eat, adequate to live, good education and the like. So all of this comes about due to causes accumulated in past lives. So then the second set of causes that need to be accumulated is the practice of generosity, patience and the like. So through engaging in practices such as generosity and patience, etc., one accumulates virtue. And this brings about the conditions that one needs for a human rebirth to be conducive, to be comfortable. So that's the second. The first was guarding ethical conduct. The third was engaging in practices such as generosity. Then the third that is required is, we understand here that having a human rebirth and with good conditions is important, it's good, but how we use this rebirth is essential. And that thereby one needs to engage in the Dharma practice. And so to meet the conditions required to engage in Dharma practice, again in the past we needed to have created those causes. And those causes then are making aspirational prayers, making heartfelt aspirational prayers. And those aspirational prayers would be so that in our future lives, we continue to meet the Mahayana Dharma, a Mahayana spiritual friend, and we have faith when encountering the Dharma and the spiritual friend. So these are the three causes that are required for us to be able to attain a precious human rebirth. And those again, guarding ethical conduct, engaging in practices such as generosity and the like, and making heartfelt aspirational prayers. So those who have attained a human rebirth have all done so in dependence on guarding ethical conduct. So because that is the cause for attaining this human rebirth. But within the human experience, we can see there is really quite a variety. So those who have better conditions, and those who have better conditions, that is because they have created those causes in the past. So here we speak about the practices of generosity and the like. So they have guarded ethical conduct and again and engaged in practices of generosity and the like, and this has resulted in them attaining not only a human rebirth, but a human rebirth with good conditions. And here in our environment, we see many people with good conditions. So they all have a human rebirth, and most of them have good conditions. However, they haven't met the Dharma, and they don't have interest in the Dharma, even if they have heard about it. So they're not able to actually extract the essence of this human existence. And this is because they haven't created the third cause, and that is that of making heartfelt aspirational prayers. So such people, they may have a human rebirth. So amongst the happy migrations, have attained a human rebirth, not a suffering rebirth. And they may have good conditions, living a comfortable life, a good job, they may be educated and the like, so they've created all these causes. But because they haven't created further causes to have met the Dharma and the like, they don't know well what should be adopted, what should be abandoned, and they may be engaging in harmful activities such as killing or be disharmonious with people and the like, and thereby creating a lot of negativity. So therefore, again, to attain this precious human rebirth, the causes need to be accumulated completely and correctly.
那边呢，俺们这个在叫我看了噻，那这个在刚刚退这个，那没叫我学了，要的话在那个，那就是缺钱啊，缺钱，咱们就过过嘛，缺一点，没缺，缺啥，缺啥，没干，缺几个，没干，在那路跑了，在那都是还都要公布的，那刚刚学有点，没这个，那呢，没路头啊的，那刚从叫我妈的，可初中生娃的，送钱呢。 但对了，初中生活的生活在没有特别具体啥吧，包括现在没有特别的。但现在叫我阿妈的了，初中生活的这基本没有要弱化去，基本没当人当，俺那基本当人当，现在俺那生活方面的，最主要嘛，现在马家把人家，俺那才对嘞，俺那讲话的，都会被讲话听过的。现在俺那，俺今年现在叫我阿妈妈来去，他缺钱搞麻烦，他缺钱给让我小时候，没那么当。
那个要不嘛就话人家，俺确定的过上面很确定的没啥了解，刚刚听过了吧？现在人家人家，俺们米粒头发的，你说人家人家，俺们你说人家，那解放我们民族的，但是米粒就全部拆开，军人方面多啊，他把就几把的米多啊，现在马上人家，他和米粒的那个米粒的，但是没去米粒起来的拆掉。
So again, we see people. So every human being has attained this human rebirth due to having guarded their ethical conduct well in previous lives. However, if that is the only cause that they accumulated and has been ripened in this life, they will find themselves in a situation where their conditions are very poor. They may have a difficulty getting sufficient food, sufficient clothing to house themselves and the like. They may live in a dangerous environment, etc. So they've been able to accumulate the cause for a human rebirth, but they haven't been able, in the past, they haven't accumulated the causes to make this, for this human rebirth to be comfortable. And furthermore, they haven't created the causes to meet the Dharma or have any interest in the Dharma, and may well be in an environment where the Dharma isn't present at all. So such a group of people have only created one of the required three causes. Then there are many others who have... So there are many others who have accumulated two of the required causes. So they've guarded their ethical conduct well, and in previous lives they have helped others, and they've been helpful people in helping others. They've practiced generosity and the like. They've had this mind of joyous perseverance, this mind that delights in engaging in virtue. So therefore they've created the causes to experience good conditions in this life. So they've guarded their ethical conduct well, and they practice generosity, joyous perseverance, patience, and the like, and therefore they have a human rebirth and comfortable conditions. However, they didn't make strong aspirational prayers or heartfelt aspirational prayers to continue to meet the Dharma in the future, and therefore they, whilst having comfortable conditions, they will either be, have never met the Dhamma, maybe never even heard of the Buddha Dhamma, or if they have no interest. And this is because the third cause hasn't been accumulated, this of making heartfelt aspirational prayers. So therefore, again, these full and complete causes need to be accumulated so as to experience this result of a precious human rebirth. There are a vast number of beings who now are experiencing the results of not having guarded their ethical conduct very well, and they will have taken a rebirth in one of the lower realms. So, for example, the animals around us. But they may well have accumulated other good causes in the past, for example, practiced generosity and the like. So here we can see examples of this quite clearly with our pets at home. So they have the ripening result of a lower realm rebirth. So this would have come about due to not guarding well their ethical conduct in the past. However, they have very good conditions. They have a comfortable home, they have healthy food and plenty of it, so they have very good conditions. And this would have come from them practicing generosity and the like. However, they are very far from having the potential that a human rebirth has. And that, so they are very far from having a precious human rebirth. And that again shows how they've accumulated only some of the causes, but not the full and complete causes. However, ourselves here, we've somehow managed to bring to have in the past accumulated all the required causes and conditions so as to attain in this life this rare, precious human rebirth. And so with this precious human, we can see that we have this precious human rebirth because we have also managed to meet the Dhamma, and we have somewhere in our locality where we can come and hear teachings, and we also have the opportunity in our lives to reflect on what we have heard, to reread our notes and books and the like, as well as to contemplate and meditate on the teachings. So we have this very rare opportunity not only to be able to receive teachings, but to put them into practice in our lives. So we really have the perfect conditions that come with a precious human rebirth. This result that we are now experiencing of having attained this precious human rebirth, if we then think about due to whose kindness have we managed to attain all these, to attain this very rare ripening result, that has only come about because in a previous life, this being, in our continuum, we engaged in the complete practices so as to generate the causes to attain this result right now. So in a previous life, we engage in practices such as guarding our ethical conduct purely, engaging acts of generosity, patience, choice, perseverance, and the like, as well as making heartfelt aspirational prayers. And because of having done that, in this life, we now are experiencing this ripening result. And to be able to have such a ripening result in the future, in our future life, to ensure that we continue in this progression where we can meet the Dharma, have a human rebirth, have good and conducive conditions, to have such a result depends on us right now accumulating those full and complete causes. So here now today we have all come together, we have a precious human rebirth, we have the opportunity right now to guard our ethical conduct well, and we have the opportunities from today to engage in practices such as generosity, patience, ethical conduct, choice, perseverance and the like, and furthermore to make these heartfelt aspirational prayers. So we have the opportunity right now in this moment and from now to accumulate these causes in a full and complete manner so that in our future lives we can continue in this forward progression towards a state free from suffering and a state where we can help others attain that too. So the way to make heartfelt aspirational prayers is to recall our teacher, whether His Holiness or whomever, and make heartfelt prayers that in all future lives, wherever, for example, His Holiness appears in the world, that we too are born there and we are able to encounter Him and His teachings at a young age, have a mind of faith in Him and His teachings, and thereby apply ourselves wholeheartedly to His practices, to His teachings, and to applying them and practicing them in our lives, and therefore make this commitment that to practice what is taught, and thereby try and generate the minds of definite emergence, bodhicitta, the wisdom realizing emptiness, and the like, and thereby making these aspirational prayers, and as well as engaging in acts such as generosity and the like, and guarding our ethical conduct, then it is very probable that we will continue to receive precious human rebirths in our future lives. This human rebirth that is so precious is unfortunately very, very difficult to attain. And so we've spoken now about the causes that are required to attain a precious human rebirth. And then it's important also to reflect on how very rare this human rebirth is. So if we think about the vast number of beings who have taken a rebirth as an animal, propelled there by their non-virtuous karma, then compare that to the number of all human beings, it's not even a fraction of a percentage. So the vast majority of beings don't even attain a human rebirth, but end up in a lower realm, such as the animal realm. And then if we look at amongst human beings, there are so few who have any interest in the Dharma. Again, it's probably less than 1% of all human beings who have an actual interest in the Dharma. And then amongst those who have an interest in the Dharma, so many of them don't have the opportunity to engage in Dharma studies and practice. So they may not have a teacher, they may not have a Dharma center, or their circumstances of their life may prevent them from coming to teachings or spending time contemplating the teachings that they have received. So when you look amongst those human beings, again, almost none have an interest in the Dharma, and amongst those that have an interest of the Dharma, again, it's a very small percentage that actually have the opportunity to be here and to receive teachings and to go home and think about those teachings and thereby apply them in their life. So here we can see just how, not only how difficult it is to attain this life, but how very precious this opportunity is that we have. So seeing how very rare and precious this life is, it becomes crucial that we use it well. So how to use it? That's here in the second line. Hear, think, and meditate unwaveringly night and day. So the way to make great use of this precious opportunity we have is, first of all, to recognize what we have attained. And so that's it's great rarity and it's great preciousness. And having recognized this, we need to make the firm commitment to not waste this life, to not waste this opportunity that we have. And because the time of our death will definitely come, this opportunity will cease. And then this opportunity that we have attained will have ended. And so it's imperative that in this time that we have left, whatever duration that may be, that we turn away from the meaningless activities of this life. And we rather use our time and our energy to engage in what has meaning. Because when this life comes to an end and this opportunity ceases, if we haven't created the causes for future good rebirths, then as we've seen with these the illustrations now previously, we are not going to continue to have the opportunity to meet the Dharma and to cultivate our minds and to progress spiritually. So if we don't use this what remains of this opportunity to turn away from the meaningless activities of this life, then we will really suffer a great loss, because we will have lost this very valuable and precious opportunity.
Then
So to prevent us at the time of death looking back at this life and having regrets for the loss that we've incurred through not making full use of this very rare and precious opportunity that we have, we need to come to understand how samsara itself is pervaded by suffering, and that there's not a moment of true peace to be experienced within samsara. And coming to see just how huge this ocean and pervasive this ocean of suffering is, we need to generate this mind that wants to be liberated from suffering, this mind that wants to be free of the suffering experience that is samsara. And then come to see how all sentient beings are in exactly the same position as us, as wanting to experience only happiness, and not just temporary happiness, but lasting happiness, but yet are caught in this prison of samsara, are trapped within this great ocean of suffering. And them, like us, are desperate to be freed from this state. So what can be done about this? And here one needs to come to understand and to know the path to be practiced, or the path to be cultivated in one's mind. In other words, what we need to make effort in. And that is the Mahayana Dhamma. Because it's through studying and contemplating on the Mahayana Dhamma and generating these minds, these mental paths, that we will be able to then cross this great ocean of suffering and liberate ourselves and liberate others from this great ocean of suffering. So this is what is coming to know this, and then applying ourselves to the Mahayana Dhamma wholeheartedly and enthusiastically is what is meant by unwaveringly night and day. So we need to engage in our practice of the Mahayana, making sure that our practice of the Mahayana Dhamma pervades our activities of the day and night. In doing this, then our life will turn out well, and our future lives will turn out well. Why? Because right now, by engaging the Mahayana Dhamma, we'll be creating the full and complete causes that are required for our future lives to go well. So therefore, it is really very important that we utilize this rare and precious opportunity as well as we can.
So to be able to engage in the Mahayana practices and thereby to cultivate these mental paths, the first step is what we have here is hear or study or receive teachings. So the first step is to receive teachings from a qualified teacher and to study these teachings repeatedly so that one comes to understand them very, very well, to eliminate doubts and to understand the teachings in detail. That's the first step. Going along with this is the second step, which is that of thinking. So here this means contemplation. So contemplating the teachings, thinking about the meaning of the teachings, seeing how they're relevant to one's life, seeing how one can apply them in one's life, and then applying them. So this is the second step, but they go together, the study and the contemplation of the teachings.
Then the third step is that of meditation. So this is now with a concentrated mind to meditate in a profound manner on what has been studied and previously contemplated on. So these are the three steps that one needs to engage in so as to come to generate the minds of the Mahayana. And this brings us to the end here. The last lines from this is the practice of bodhisattvas. So the practice of the bodhisattvas here is to engage in the study of the Dharma, to contemplate on the Dharma, to meditate on the Dharma, so that these minds start to arise in oneself, and then they start to arise in a way that's more stable. It's in other words, they're present for longer periods. And for generating these minds repeatedly, and studying repeatedly, and contemplating repeatedly, so this day and night, then whatever activities we engage in, we then can do so with this mind, with the mind of the Mahayana Dharma, and we can practice generosity, we can practice patience, we can do so with this mind of choice, perseverance and the like. So all of this is the practice of the of a bodhisattva. Attaining the state that is completely free of all suffering, and where one has the greatest happiness and ability to be of benefit to others, is the state of Buddhahood. And this contemplating about samsara and contemplating about bodhicitta, one will generate this aspiration to achieve the state of Buddhahood. This will become our goal and our heartfelt desire. So to achieve such a state, one needs to practice in the same way as all the Buddhas have done, and that is and that can be seen in how all the bodhisattvas are practicing. So we see here an illustration of what the practices of a bodhisattva are, and this is what we need to engage in. Because if we want to attain the result of Buddhahood, we need to accumulate those full and complete causes. So through coming to accomplish those causes, we need to do as is presented here in this verse, make the greatest use of our precious human rebirth through turning away from the meaningless distractions of this life, through contemplating, through receiving teachings and studying those teachings, and through relying on our teacher and his teachings to contemplate and think about the meaning of them, and then later being able to meditate on them, and thereby applying these teachings throughout our life, in not just in study and meditation, but in our interaction with others. And in this way, we will create the causes for progression on the Dharma path. We'll create the causes for the achievement of the goals of the Dharma path.
Mm-hmm. monam number da monam yi tamja ho la ro da churim se di da di to ye ju churim se de kan si la go re sna da no ju di ro da ni sem je so chu chi mi sem bi ge chi mi a sem bi ge chi mes me ke len chi chi ne ne ge dan ane sem je ne kuma shan gi da kuma ku ku me sem me ke len chi ane ne chi shan le ju shi mi sem bi ge tamja ke len chi ne ane di ro da da na do ju na
So he spoke about these three causes that are required to attain a precious human rebirth. First, purely guarding ethical conduct. Secondly, engaging in practices such as generosity and the like. And third, to making heartfelt aspirational prayers. So let's talk a little bit more about what ethical conduct is. So this ethical conduct that we must guard purely so as to ensure that we receive good human rebirths in the future, good rebirths in the future such as human rebirths. So to guard our ethical conduct well, it comes down to making a firm commitment, thinking about the suffering that is experienced by others when one, for example, kills them, and the suffering that we will experience from that result, and thereby making the commitment not to kill any sentient being. Secondly, thinking about the suffering that is experienced by others when we, if we engage in acts of dishonesty, such as stealing or misappropriating others' possessions. And then thinking about the suffering results that will come to us from doing such things. And then making the commitment we will refrain from such activity. And likewise with lying, thinking about the suffering that others experience when we are dishonest in how we speak to them, and the suffering result that will come to us, thereby making the commitment to turn away from lying, etc. So in brief, to make this firm and heartfelt commitment to turn away from harming others, and to make this heartfelt commitment to turn away from harming others. This is the meaning of ethical conduct condensed into its briefest form. But this kind of contemplation is something, as with all forms of meditation, something that needs to be done repeatedly, not just one as a one-off or occasionally. So we need to repeatedly reflect on the impact of harmful behavior, and think repeatedly about the impact on others as well as the ripening result that we will experience. And thinking about this repeatedly, the wish to turn away from such activity will grow stronger and stronger. And as this wish grows stronger, it starts to become more sustained outside of the meditation practice, and therefore it's more easy for us to pervade our activities. And therefore, as we contemplate in this again and again and again, we will start to see our speech changes, our behavior changes, because our mind, this mind of guarding ethical conduct, this is growing stronger and more stable. So this is how we come to guard our ethical conduct well.
That
And then to talk about the second set of causes that are required to attain a precious human rebirth, in particular that of having good conditions within one's life. So we mentioned generosity. So generosity, there are many types of generosity. So the easiest to understand and to engage in is the generosity relating to material things. So here we can help others in a number of ways. For example, helping poor people who do not have enough food to sustain themselves or do not have adequate clothing to help guard them, to protect themselves from the weather and the like. Or those who are ill but do not have the means to receive good medical attention or the medical treatment that they require. So there are many ways here that we can help those who are materially quite destitute and significantly less fortunate than ourselves. The second way is to protect, so that's to do, generosity that deals with the material side. Then the second type of generosity is to generosity to protect others from harm. So this is an act of generosity where a being's life is in danger, but we can intervene and help save that being's life, and in that way protect, practice the generosity of protecting their life. So this, these opportunities don't come so readily, but if we, for example, we see an insect that is struggling in water and it has no means to escape from the water, and we carefully rescue it from the water, and thereby it can its life is protected and can continue, then this is the generosity of protecting from harm. And this is the second type of generosity. And then the third type of generosity is here where through giving advice and we can be of help to others. So for example, where we have a good required relationship with someone, if we can through giving them good advice, we can turn them away from suffering and towards accumulating the causes of happiness, then this is giving the third type of generosity. And this, of course, can happen in a more mundane way, or more ordinary way, with those who have the wish to study, but they don't have the means to do so, that we help provide them the means to do so. So, in this way, their life can improve. So these come down to the three types of generosity, that of giving material goods, that of giving protection from harm, and that of giving the Dharma, or giving education. So these, if we to practice these, it's important that we cultivate the mind beforehand that this is something that I want to do because I can see the benefit for others and I see the benefit for myself and I want to do this. And whenever I see the opportunity to help, I will joyfully take that opportunity, I will embrace that opportunity, and I will help others willingly. Because if we haven't generated this mind in a powerful and stable way beforehand, we may encounter an opportunity to benefit others, but the thought may not occur to us to benefit others, or reasons not to engage may dominate us, and we don't then utilize this opportunity. Therefore, it's important to cultivate this mind in meditation, bring that mind up again throughout our day, that whenever I have the opportunity to help others, I will take that opportunity. And thereby, will create many causes that will ensure that in our future lives we have good and comfortable conditions and conducive conditions to make our future lives meaningful as well.
Amongst the variety of activities that one can engage in to ensure that in our future lives we have good conditions, we have now spoken in more detail about the practice of generosity. So a second one is the practice of patience. And this is imperative because when engaging in guarding our ethical conduct and engaging in acts of generosity towards others, we will undoubtedly encounter problems and difficulties. And we have experience of this. We try to help others or do the right thing, and or we refuse to do something, and others criticize us, others may criticize us, denigrate us, they may even fight with us, argue with us. So we have experience of when we try to either help or we'd rather not engage in something that we see as harmful, that we do encounter problems doing this, or we don't see any benefits, or we're not feeling appreciated, etc. So in these situations there is the danger that the selfish mind can dominate, and we can say, I'm not going to get involved here, especially I'm not going to help that person because they're always horrible to me, I don't see why I should help them, or they're nasty to people that I like. And this then is of course a great danger for someone who aspires to the bodhisattva paths. So rather what we should do is when we're engaging in acts to benefit others or regarding our ethical conduct, with whatever difficulties we encounter, we need to practice patience. So we need to do this when, for example, someone scolds us or belittles us or speaks harshly to us, then this is a difficulty, this is a suffering that we're experiencing. But then we need to be patient with this and see the context for what, see the situation in reality, that this little bit of suffering we are experiencing compared to the benefits that we are trying to attain is really not on the same scale at all. And thinking like this, we can easily be patient with the difficulties that we experience when trying to help others or guard our ethical conduct. And if we apply ourselves to the practice of patience well, through contemplating it in meditation and thereby utilizing it well in our daily life, the ripening results in the future life will ensure that our conditions continue to be good. So here the practice of patience brings about results of having an appealing, not a physical appearance that repels others, so a physical appearance that is appealing to others. And this helps one to be to engage with others. And likewise, our speech will be, people will be more inclined to engage with what we're saying and listen to what we're saying and follow what we're saying.
and be influenced by what we say and what we do. So this all comes about in dependence on the practice of patience. So in other words, in future lives it will be that much easier to engage and benefit others due to experiencing then the results of the patience that we practice in this life. And we all, so that's in the second practice. The first was generosity, the second is patience. And now a third is one of joyous perseverance. So the mind of joyous perseverance is a mind that takes delight in engaging in virtue. So this is a very important mind, because when we enjoy doing something, we're going to want to do it more. We won't have to force ourselves to do it, but we will willingly and wholeheartedly engage in it. And thereby the mind is so much more powerful, so much more positive, and the result is so much more powerful. So here, this practice of joyous perseverance, or to cultivate this mind of joyous perseverance, is to comes about through reflecting on the good that we have done and generating joy in, oh, today I did this, it was so fantastic, I helped in this way and in that way, and in the future these results will come about, this is fantastic. And so rejoicing in this mind and rejoicing in these activities, generating this mind of joy, we will want to engage in further activities, further virtuous activities. So this mind really helps power all our other virtuous activities and ensure that our practice continues to grow in strength. So that's a third way to cultivate the good conditions in future lives.
Some day, Jingi,
Spoken now about four of the practices of the six perfections. So we first looked at ethical conduct, and then we looked at the three, generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance. The fifth practice is that of concentration. So concentration means that when one is cultivating a virtuous mind, for example, making the firm condition, the firm when one is contemplating, for example, ethical conduct, that we will refrain from harmful activities and make the commitment to refrain from harmful activities, we then come to think about it in a single-pointed manner, in an undistracted manner, and that is the practice of concentration. Similarly, if we think about generosity, and we're doing the analytical side, we're thinking, I will help others in these ways, and I'll do so at whatever opportunity I get, then we come to hold the experience that we have of that meditation, we hold it in a single-pointed way, then this is the practice of concentration. Or if one is meditating on love and one is love or compassion, one's meditating on either object and thinking about how all sentient beings want only to experience happiness, and we generate this mind of love wanting them to experience only happiness, we try and do this with this undistracted mind, a concentrated mind. And the same with compassion, thinking about how all sentient beings will be free from suffering, and that's how wonderful it would be if they're all free from suffering. And in this way we generate this mind of compassion, and we try and do it in a single-pointed and undistracted manner, and then this is this mind of concentration. So whatever the object is, bodhicitta, impermanence, emptiness, to try and do it in a single-pointed way, and then this is the practice of concentration. And then that's the fifth and the sixth and last one, that is the practice of wisdom. So this is the analytical mind that is investigating. So when we in meditating on whichever object, and for example the precious human rebirth, its variety of causes, how difficult it is to attain, its great value, this is an analytical investigating mind. And thinking about the object in this way, this is the practice of wisdom. Likewise, the meditation on generosity. So you're thinking about, for example, how suffering beings require help, and if I help them, these various good results will come for me, as well as improving the situation of others. And if I, in my normal life, am likely to meet this and this and this opportunity to help, and therefore I will respond when I do in a certain way, then this kind of analytical thinking meditation, this is the cultivation of wisdom. And then, of course, wisdom relates to emptiness. So thinking about how all phenomena, whilst appearing to exist truly, appearing to exist from their own side, they actually don't exist in that way. They rather exist dependently. They exist dependent on causes and parts and the like. And this is now the contemplation of wisdom in relation to emptiness. So whatever phenomena, whatever meditation object we have, we apply this mind of wisdom, we apply the mind of concentration. And we can also think about how the topic we've had here, how can our next life turn out well? What does it depend on causes, or is it causeless? If it depends on causes, what are those causes, and how can I accumulate those causes? So this then is, of course, a meditation of wisdom, and we try to do it in a concentrated way as well.
So of these three causes that are required for a precious human rebirth,
We've spoken right now about the first two, that of guarding one's ethical conduct purely, and that the second, to, in order to attain a human rebirth, and then in order to attain good conditions in that, we spoke about the practices of generosity and patience, choice, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. So now we come to the third of the three causes to ensure that one attains a precious human rebirth, and that is making stainless prayers. So a good time to do this would be once we've when we've completed our practice, and whether it's some study or some contemplation, and then we come to dedicate. And here we should make heartfelt aspirations that in all our future lives we continue to receive a precious human rebirth. We meet our Mahayana spiritual friend again, and wherever he is chooses to be born, that may we be born there too, to meet him, to have faith in him, and to be able to receive teachings from him, and those teachings to have faith in and to put into practice, to study and to contemplate and put into practice. And so we need to make prayers like this. And in addition to praying that not only can we continue to meet the Mahayana spiritual friend and have an open mind towards the teachings and apply them, we need to then reflect how amongst all sentient beings, the vast, vast majority, whilst wanting to be happy, keep on engaging in activities that bring about further suffering. And the path to happiness, that of developing the minds of the Dharma in one's own continuum, these remain closed to them because they haven't generated the causes. So generating this mind of compassion for all sentient beings, we dedicate our merit so that all sentient beings in their future lives, they may attain precious human rebirths, and that they meet me, and that I may be their teacher and teach them and guide them to the state of Buddhahood, the state completely free from all suffering. So making these heartfelt aspirations again and again, we will create the full set of causes that are required to ensure that we continue to have precious human rebirths in the future.
Da dini ke tu esunga roci na ko kan milu rimbo si toto kora. Jesa milu rimbo dini ke rimbo si toya ke yudi. Da niin se kiri ne tu samna si ko cebo res. An dini ke cebo ina da dini ke nyamne cebo na jenju milu rimbo si guha de. Tharba ba thamje kimbe tobi guha cebo niga cebo kora. Dini ke di cebo ina di ya niba kasi chorna panyo koma thora thanya ne kora. Jesa de cebo cima ne jenju milu rimbo si toto kora. I
Repeatedly making effort day and night to accumulate these full and complete causes, we will attain the we will accumulate all the required causes that for continuing a precious human rebirth. So a precious the conditions to practice the Dharma come about for a human being to have attained such a precious human rebirth, but it can also be attained within some of the groups of the gods. So the gods have many divisions, and most are like human beings in that they have suffering and difficulties and maybe no opportunity to practice the Dharma and the like. But there are some groups of gods who do have the opportunity and good conditions to practice Dharma, such as those who are born in Tushita, in the god realm of Tushita. So these sets of causes that we accumulate are the same to be reborn either in somewhere like a god realm such as Tushita, but they need to be much more powerful, or to be reborn as a human being, but with a precious human rebirth, not just an ordinary human rebirth. So these causes that we accumulate, that we encourage her to accumulate day and night, they don't only result in further precious human rebirths. They also are causes that are consistent with the results of liberation and enlightenment. So because of their great value, therefore it's imperative that we strive day and night to accomplish such causes, because through the result of a precious human rebirth, we will continue with this progression towards liberation and full enlightenment. So how do we go about accumulating causes day and night? So here we start with when we rise in the morning. When we rise in the morning, we should start by setting a motivation for the day. We do our contemplation, our meditation, and we think about our day ahead, and we set a motivation for the day ahead. And we think about the opportunities that we will have to benefit others in the day ahead. We make the commitment that in those opportunities, when they come, I will help others. And when we think about the day ahead and we see circumstances that may well arise where we could harm others through our actions or our speech and the like, we make the commitment that we will refrain from anything that's harmful towards others. So that's the motivation that we need to set in conjunction with our morning practice. And then throughout the day, whatever activities we have, to try and take a few moments here and there, whether driving the car or boiling the kettle, and then just to remind ourselves of the motivation that we set that morning. Because then it will become, if the motivation was set in a powerful manner in the morning, then throughout the day, we just need to remind ourselves, and that same mind will arise, and that powerful motivation this morning will come again and will continue to power our virtuous activities and guard us and protect us from engaging in non-virtue. Then in the evening, at night, we should engage in some practice there, and maybe purification and the like. And when we go to sleep, we then, when we lie down, we need to generate a virtuous mind then. Because if we generate a virtuous mind just before going to sleep, that virtuous mind will continue during the time of sleep. So here, just to describe it in brief, we lie down and we make the firm commitment that we will refrain from harming others completely, and whenever we have the opportunity, we will wholeheartedly engage in practices of helping others. We will do whatever we can to help others, and we will do our best to refrain from harming others in any way. And having such a motivation at the time of sleep, this motivation will carry on through our sleep state. Then we arise the next morning, and it continues. We do our morning practice, we set a motivation for the day ahead, thinking about what opportunities will come in the day ahead, etc. So thinking like this and engaging in such a practice, these will bring about great benefits in the immediate term as well as the long term for ourselves and for others. And to attain the result of a bodhisattva and thereafter the result of a Buddha, we need to engage in these practices, because these are the practices that the Buddhas themselves engaged in previously, and that the bodhisattvas are engaging in right now. So like them, we should practice in this way.
Of course, most people here don't have the opportunity in their daily life to physically work for the Dharma, such as working at the Dharma Center and the like. However, you mustn't let that be an obstacle to your engaging in Dharma practice and cultivating these practices of a bodhisattva, because what makes an activity a practice of the Dharma is dependent on the mind of the person doing the activity, more so than the action itself. So to take an illustration that's easy to understand, sometimes people will feed fish. So there'll be maybe a lake, and they fish. Then they'll go and throw in some fish food or some bread, and the fish will gather. And they may do it just having some fun with the family, maybe make a little video of it, and they're just having a nice day out. And it's good to do. However, if we're trying to engage in practices of a bodhisattva, we can do exactly the same activity, but beforehand, having cultivated an understanding of the pervasive suffering of samsara and the suffering that sentient beings are experiencing, and how they are not able to liberate themselves from the suffering because of the confines of their rebirth, because of not having a link to the Dharma, a karmic link with the Dharma and the Buddhas and the like, we then generate great compassion for their situation. And wanting them to be free of this kind of coarse suffering and to achieve both temporary and ultimate happiness, we generate love for them. And having these minds of definite emergence, love and compassion in our mind, then when we do exactly the same activity of feeding bread to the fish, then we are engaging in the activities of a bodhisattva. So the practice, the physical practice, is exactly the same, but the mental path that has been generated is completely different. And therefore, the result that comes from such an action is completely different. The amount of virtue that has been accumulated is completely different. And then we should finish this now virtuous activity with a dedication. And here dedicating that all sentient beings, in particular those that I've now made connection with, but all sentient beings through this virtue, may they be liberated from suffering rebirths, may they come to meet the Dharma, have faith in the Dharma, and may I myself lead them to the state of liberation and enlightenment. So here we can see from a very different mental engagement, primarily in terms of the motivation cultivated beforehand and sustained during the activity, as well as the dedication afterwards, that this now, that same activity now becomes the practice of a bodhisattva. And this is something that we can replicate in all our activities in our life.
Mm.
To give another illustration here, because really the important thing here is to take this advice and apply it in whatever activities one engages in, because we all engage in different activities, but we have the possibility to bring the mind of a bodhisattva into whatever activity that is. So all of us engage in cleaning. How we engage in that cleaning on a mental basis will depend on what result comes from, just something like sweeping or cleaning one's home or whatever. So if someone does this with a mind of resentment, thinking, oh, this work really sucks, or why is it always me that has to do the cleaning, and this I'm really fed up with this, such a person is just going to create negativity. The act is just one of cleaning, but the mind is really poisonous. Another person, well, this is my lot in life, or this is my job, I accept that, and they're just clean, and the mind is all over the show. Then such a person's not creating negativity, but they're not creating virtue either. The third person takes his teachings that we've received here and now thinks about the benefit that their activity will bring to others. People like to be in a clean environment. By cleaning this environment, may they be happy living here or working here. By cleaning this environment, may I prevent sentient beings coming here, insects and the like coming here, and thereby being killed or harmed in this environment, and thereby may I protect others. And also by keeping this environment clean, may those who come here be healthy, and may their lives be long, and may they engage in virtue. So thinking in this way, one is still sweeping, one is still cleaning, but one's mind is completely different. So such a person will be generating merit. And depending on how powerful this mind is, really a lot of merit can be created just from a very simple act. So this shows how three people doing exactly the same thing can be creating negativity or not creating negativity or virtue, and a third person, the same activity, will accumulate a huge amount of merit. So here, it's in taking this Dharma and applying it unwaveringly night and day, this shows how it's not so dependent on activity, but primarily dependent on our mind.
And in the year, then the new Benado Kala said, you know, she win another Kala Sava and that Kala scared it. Only then the Dakon the Sanji said, I'm going to the pair, Mother Sachibui, said that he called near the Kala the Turoji, the Yapu Puvena, that conjured Puvigis and I'm Sagora. And in the year, that she saw the side of the time he drove Sosuki that Kala the Chapa that the nickname by chair. I'm thinking. So
And something else, to take another illustration of something that we all do, and that is eating every day. So when we eat, generally we know that before we eat, we offer the food that we are about to enjoy to all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. And we try to do this with some concentration and in a heartfelt way so as to accumulate merit to be of benefit to others. And then when it comes to eating and enjoying the meal, it's good if we can keep our mind engaged with what we're doing rather than necessarily getting distracted. And here being aware, for example, of the arousal of attachment and then guarding our mind against this affliction of attachment for the delicious food. And in this way, we're practicing ethical conduct. We're guarding our mind against the arousal of afflictions. And then furthermore, whilst we're enjoying the food, we can further engage in the practice of generosity. So previously we offered it to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and now we're aware that this food will nourish the beings within my body. If I don't consume food, they will not survive. So this is not just for a meal for me, it's a meal for the beings who depend on me. And furthermore, beings also depend on me being healthy and my being physically strong, because thereby I can continue to engage in the practices of studying, contemplating, and meditation, and the beneficial activities to others. So therefore, I'm eating this meal so as to be healthy and to be strong in order to be of benefit to others. So thinking like this, it's very clear how we're practicing generosity to be of benefit of others. And we guarded our mind now against the mind of attachment. And furthermore, when we go to the toilet later in the day, then here too, if we have the mind on what we're doing rather than distracted, we can use this opportunity to engage in virtue. Because there are beings that see our waste products as meals, as food. It is their source of nourishment. And being aware of this, we can then make the prayer that we make in connection with beings, and may their body be sustained, and through this merit that I'm accumulating, may they attain precious human rebirths in the future, meet the Dharma, etc. So in this way, we can accumulate merit through every stage of eating a meal, from the offering beforehand, to the contemplation during the meal, and to the going to the toilet afterwards. So all of this can ensure that we, just from an ordinary act, we can generate a lot of merit. And the only thing that's different in what is being described here, it's not the process, the physical process, it's all what's happening in the mind, the mental process. And so in this way, we can accumulate virtue of guarding ethical conduct and practicing generosity through our three doors, through the body, through the speech, and through the mind, when we through just the action of eating a meal.
So we can stop here for this morning.
So this morning we've started with the actual practices of a bodhisattva, and the first of the preliminary practices, the attainment of a precious human rebirth. So we spoke about the causes that were required for a precious human rebirth, guarding ethical conduct purely, practices such as generosity, etc., and making stainless and heartfelt prayers. Then we spoke about the rarity of this precious human rebirth, and we drew comparisons between the number of humans to animals, and we then also looked within the human beings, drawing a comparison to see how few actually have this opportunity to engage in cultivating the Dharma and their continuum. So we spoke about how very difficult it is to attain this human rebirth, and then we also spoke about the great preciousness of it, because it's on the basis of this precious human rebirth that we can continue with our progression for our own benefit and the benefit of others to the state of liberation and Buddhahood. So here, taking this today, we should make the heartfelt commitment to recognize the preciousness of our opportunity and its great impermanence, and thereby make this commitment that day and night to engage in the practices of a bodhisattva. And having made this commitment to utilize what remains of this opportunity as well as we can, then it will become very easy to day and night engage in the practices of a bodhisattva. So we spoke a bit about that as well, how in the morning one has one's meditation practice of whatever duration one can afford, and therein set the motivation for the day ahead. Then during the day, whatever activities we do, recall that motivation, try and engage in those activities with such a motivation, and thereby whatever we're doing, we will be engaging in the accumulation of merit for the welfare of others. And then we spoke about, at the end of the day, how one can reflect on the day, engage in purification and the like, and at the time of going to sleep, generate minds of love and compassion and the like. So this was all described today. So we'll stop here for now. Some questions? Okay, then more time for lunch. Thank you.
Sāshī